Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Men of the Scarlet and Gray Live. Fun and informative, as always, your host, Josh Schott, and joined by fellow Men of the Scarlet and Gray writers, Chip and Shannon. Shannon, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Thanks.
Chip, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Well, that's great to hear. We have a lot to talk about on the show. And, of course, before we get going, we want to take a moment of silence here for former Ohio State assistant coach and former Youngstown State coach Dan Peters, who passed away today at the age of 60 of cancer. Please observe a moment of silence here. Thank you for observing that. We wanted to make sure we mentioned that before we started the show. Of course, he was a big part of the Ohio State program for years, and Akron, of course, Youngstown State. So, and he actually started his career just up the road from where I live in Cambridge, Ohio. So I just wanted to take that moment to observe that moment of silence for him. So did you guys want to add anything you want to share about Coach Peters?
Well, you know, With all due respect to Coach Peters and his family and his years of service, you know, to the Ohio State community, and I know Shannon, you know, this month has been talking about being a cancer survivor, and on a personal note, I guess maybe this might be a little too much information for our listening audience, but a few years ago my father died from lung cancer, so anytime anyone loses a someone that they know or a loved one or a family or friend to such a deadly disease, it's always a difficult thing. So I thought that was a very classy and respectful thing to do for Coach Peters and his family during this difficult time.
Is there anything you want to add, Shannon?
Yeah, I have to agree with Chip. You know, being a survivor myself, I know it's rough having to go through, you know, what his family's had to go through, and I mean, I didn't have to go through anything that he's had to go through, and I mean, it's a shame that a man as young as he is to lose his life and to touch so many people. And I've never met him or know anything about him personally, but everything that I've heard about him is nothing but positive, and how many people's lives that he's touched, and how many kids that he's helped become men, you know, and that will, you know, stay with them for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. That's two great thoughts from both of you. Our thoughts go out to his family and friends, and hope they can get through this difficult time, as we hope they can their hearts can heal soon. So to go to a more lighter topic now, let's talk about Ohio State's victory last weekend in double overtime over Penn State, 31-24. Before we even start breaking down this game, we had our guest on last week, of course, Kevin McGuire, a fantastic guest. And during our predictions, of course, all of us picked Ohio State to win the game fairly big. And Kevin went with a more conservative guesstimate with he predicted a 35-17 victory, I believe, for Ohio State in the game. And he mentioned on Twitter, I saw he was the closest, so he's got to pull an Alabama and claim victory there. So I had to mention that before we started the show. So shout out to Kevin. We hope to have him back on the show again. I didn't know if you guys saw that.
I was going to say, I want to credit Kevin for, you know, again, you know, it's you know, I want to give credit to Penn State, not just Kevin, but I mean, let's you know, give credit to and compliment Penn State for their performance in the 31-24 double overtime Ohio State victory. You know, because last week during the podcast, I'll throw myself out there, I predicted Ohio State would win 56-17, and I know we're going to go into greater detail about it, but Ohio State was very fortunate to escape Happy Valley with a victory over a very determined and outmanned Penn State team. You know, Penn State head coach James Franklin's going to get the Nittany Lions turned around. I'm not sure, besides Kevin, you know, beyond this, you know, after that controversial victory, how many Penn State fans we have listening to our podcast, but I have every confidence with time and recruiting that Penn State's going to get it turned around. I tweeted immediately afterwards. I'm not sure if either of you saw it. I tweeted immediately after the game. The next Ohio State-Penn State game is scheduled for October 17th in 2015. So fans from both schools have something really to look forward to. I anticipate that being a night game next season. But that was a nail biter. It brought me back to the 2002 national championship. You know, not just because of the final score, but just because of the closeness of the game.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something to it's one to circle on your calendars for next year, especially with the way the game started. Good segue into the breaking down. We're going to go quarter by quarter through this ugly mess of a game. It wasn't easy to watch at times, but Penn State, of course, they got the ball first to start off the game. And on second down, a third down play, the very first drive of the game, Penn State, they threw an interception into the hands of an Ohio State defender. I believe it was Eli Apple. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Actually, it was Von Bell.
Von Bell. Yeah, my bad. I knew Apple was involved with a couple of close interception plays, but yeah, Von Bell was ruled an interception. When they went to replay, it was clearly not an interception, at least from my angle. I don't know what you guys think, but
it was. I don't think from anyone's angle, especially for the people on the television audience and the people that were in attendance in Happy Valley.
But it was on the angle that was the most important, and it was on the official's angle.
Right.
You're exactly right.
You're right. The Twitterverse was naturally exploding with how is this possible with, you know, today's technology of, you know, that you're saying that you can't, the referees cannot get the proper feed. And that kind of, you know, led me into the train of thought that I'm not sure if either of you have heard this, but I'm kind of inclined to agree with this train of thought that by and large, having the replay system that we all, you know, enjoy, and for years, and again, kind of dating myself here, for years, we'd say, why don't they use instant replay? If anything, it seems to have made the officials that much more dependent upon the replay system rather than, you know, being more decisive with their call. And again, you know, it's like it just seems as though that by and large, like that's kind of, it's almost become kind of like a crutch for them to fall back on, like, oh, you know, like, well, we didn't have the right feed. Maybe I'm, again, I realize we're an Ohio State centered podcast, but that was just something that I've heard over the last couple of days. I'm not sure if either of you have heard that from, you know, from other people that were being critical of the Big Ten. I certainly hope that the Big Ten is going to suspend this officiating crew, because I'm sure Josh is going to get into talking about some of the other calls throughout the game. There were some noticeable gaffes that took place that not only hurt Penn State, but also helped Penn State in this game throughout the contest.
Well, I guess when I was listening to, or not listening, but watching BTN yesterday on BTN Live, and I guess on the second play of Penn State's possession, all the feeds up into the instant replay booth went out, except for the overhead view. And it just so happened on the fifth play is when the interception happened. So that's the only angle that they had was the overhead feed. And the question was brought up, why can't you just stick your head out the window and look at, you know, the scoreboard? Well, you can't do that because, you know, the home field advantage and all that kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah. Well, I guess going forward, from what I understand, it's not going to be immediate, but it's probably going to be discussed, you know, during the off season, and it's going to be next year, is they're going to have another feed. The, you know, the live feed is also going to be piped in there on, like, a separate TV. So not only are they going to have the different TVs with all the different angles, they're also going to have what we're watching at home. So they're going to be able to see that. So while, you know, if that situation happens again, they can see the same thing that we're seeing at home, so they can make a judgment call based on that.
Well, that's a fantastic idea, because that was a blatantly wrong call. I mean, and of course, as an Ohio State fan point of view, I'm not going to complain about it. But as an unbiased college football fan looking at that from that angle, that was terrible. It was a terrible call, and it really hurt the momentum for Penn State to start off the game.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, from an Ohio State fan, I mean, and like I put in my power poll today, that's, you know, that's karma biting you in the butt for being outside a hotel room at 4 o'clock in the morning with air horns. I mean, honestly, I mean, what kind of job?
You?
What kind of childish games is that?
Is that Jim Bielema?
Well, I guess from I don't know if you guys
seen. Bring her up.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys seen, but at all of a sudden, like 4 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden, all the Ohio State fans, players, just started tweeting, and they were mad that the Penn State fans were outside the hotel room with air horns, just blaring them, waking the players up.
Yeah, I saw Pat Elflein tweeted that. Yeah, I did see that.
And this isn't the first time this has happened. Because I guess Corey Lindsey tweeted back, yeah, they did that to us before, and don't worry, we beat them then, and you guys will beat us. You know, we beat them then, and you guys will beat them this time. So, I mean, part of that comes back, karma does come back in different ways.
Absolutely. Moving on now from the interception play, of course, Ohio State, they got the ball. They immediately they marched right down the field for the score. 10-yard run by Ezekiel Elliott to make it 7-0. Quite early on, the defense in the next drive shut Penn State out on a three and out, and Ohio State then went three and out. Penn State then got the ball back on the next possession. After about 8-9 plays, Ohio State was able to give them to punt the ball again, with the Buckeyes getting the ball back again, start the end of the first half, second quarter. And this is when the second big controversial play of the game happened. Sean Nuremberger made a field goal 49 yards. The field goal obviously made it. There's no question about that, but as it showed, they showed later on the TV feed, the play clock clearly went down to zero before Nuremberger was able to get the kick off. It was a good 3 to 5 seconds. Your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, I was not aware of what Shannon just discussed in terms of the TV feed. That would have definitely helped. To me, it goes back to just not only having the right technical, if we want to say the feeds or the right technical capabilities, in regardless of whether we're talking within Beaver Stadium or any of the locations where Ohio State may play. But I want to implicate the officials, because that both of those, regardless of whether we're talking the ball hitting the ground when it clearly was visible and no matter if we're talking the television replay of Von Bell's non-interception, Sean Nuremberger, I think he would have been good, by the way, if he would have been pushed back 5 yards, that would have been good, just for what it's worth. From that angle, he was probably fine from 60, but digressing here, I just think that the officiating crew needs to be reprimanded, and so maybe things have changed as we're recording this, but to the best of my knowledge, the Big Ten and Jim Delaney have not yet publicly reprimanded that officiating crew, and I think that's a major disservice to Penn State in the aftermath of this very close game.
Well, I know the Big Ten did come out and say that on that particular call that they screwed up, that the officiating crew did screw that call up. That, there might be, a leeway of maybe like a second, a half second or something like that, but 3 seconds, there's no way that they did screw that call up.
Now, have they been reprimanded?
I have, to be honest with you, I have not heard that they've been reprimanded, so I can't, answer that question, honestly. But, and they, like Chip said, there was a lot of things that they, that they did wrong.
Yeah, we haven't, Josh, to be fair, I know, and Penn State fans, they have a legitimate gripe. I don't want to take anything away from them. But Ohio State was on the receiving end of some questionable calls near the end of the game, so I don't think.
Yeah, I'll be getting to that.
I have every confidence you're going to. So I just wanted to come across as I'm just wanting to be a shill for Penn State in a close loss. I definitely think the officiating was poor all across the board. It was more noticeable with the fact that Ohio State gained 10 points out of what may have been what may have played a big part in their victory over Penn State.
Yeah. The penalties hurt both sides. There's no doubt about it. And in the first half, though, the Penn State, it definitely hurt them more than Ohio State. But as the game went out, it obviously balanced out, and we'll be getting to that. Of course, after the field goal was made, they traded possessions a couple times. And Penn State, who struggled punting the ball all night, that really hurt them. That was really an underrated part of the game. Penn State's punting did them no favors in this game. So the Buckeyes, they got the ball back at the they got the ball at Penn State 39 with about 6.5 minutes to go till the half. And they Buckeyes marched down the field pretty much relatively with ease. Barrett made a one-yard touchdown pass to Hireman. The game was 17-0 at this point. And nothing really else happened for the rest of the half. Ohio State was able to stop Penn State again, and they went to the half 17-0 Ohio State. So at this point, I'm thinking the game's pretty much out of reach. I think Ohio State's they come out in the second half. They score another touchdown, and this game is pretty much over with. Ohio State can cruise to a victory and get out of Happy Valley. Of course, that's not what happened, but is that what you guys were thinking at that point?
Well, Shannon, did you want to go first?
Go ahead.
So something that you were right about, Josh. I agree that Penn State's punting certainly hurt them, I mean, throughout the entire evening. But an individual, and I don't want this to come across as that I'm attacking the individual, but Jalen Marshall, perhaps not just in the first half, but throughout the game, Jalen Marshall, I believe he is a superior punt returner than Dontre Wilson, who was playing the position earlier in the season. I believe Jalen Marshall is far more natural and far more explosive as a punt returner, but there were some questionable special teams plays that could have really hurt Ohio State. I mean, with fumbled punts, he fielded a punt within the 4-yard line. I mean, they just weren't that. Jalen Marshall, again, I think is a tremendous player, but I thought that there were some plays that could have really blown up on Ohio State on the special team side of things as it relates to Penn State punting the ball to Ohio State.
You're 100% right on that. I mean, especially catching the ball, you know, within the inside the 5-yard line. You don't do that. You let that ball, you know, try to go into the end zone or something. But, I mean, I know a lot of the times, though, Ohio State had a lot of good field position because the punter for Penn State, he really wasn't getting a lot of good kicks off. And Ohio State was getting a lot of good field position, which was helping them. And you got to give credit to Johnston for Ohio State because, man, was he – that kid's got a leg.
Right. One of the most critical plays near the end, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in greater detail, but again, I'm sure Coach Tressel was smiling because it was Tressel ball at its finest. I mean, Johnston, they punted the ball and were able to pin Penn State on their own one. So
Devin Smith catching a ball on the half-yard line.
Right.
That was an excellent play.
So, you know, special teams, that's the thing. If you know, during Coach Tressel's tenure, people used to scoff and make fun of Coach Tressel for saying how the punt is the most important play in football. But as you know, Josh, as you said, you know, and I think Shannon and I agree that Penn State's poor punting definitely was a, I don't want to say a hidden gift. It was blatantly, you know, advantageous for Ohio State and was very decisive in, as Shannon just said, in setting up Ohio State with tremendous field position all throughout the night.
Yeah, Johnston, he was, I mean, yeah, we all scoff at punting, but he was really an underrated difference maker for Ohio State in that game because there were so many punts where they just pinned Penn State back so far that their offense, which struggled for pretty much most part of the game, I mean, it just made it that more difficult for an offense that was struggling. So, I mean, I do it all the time on Twitter. I mentioned Cam Johnston had doing a great job, but he could go down as one of arguably the greatest punter in Ohio State history the way he plays.
Oh, I can definitely agree with that. And I mean, as far as saying struggling, you know, Penn State's offense struggling, I think Ohio State's defense was dominant for three quarters. You know, I think they held Penn State to like, what was it, like 86 yards for the first three quarters?
I believe so. It was right around 85, 90 yards.
So, I mean, you know, you could say, you know, Ohio State or Penn State was struggling, or was it, you know, Ohio State's defense? I mean, either or, but, you know, the tables turned when all of a sudden, you know, and I know Chip's going to allude to this because he's been, you know, preaching this on past podcasts, but when JT got, you know, his knee sprained, that that changed a lot of the dynamics of the game.
Yeah, Barrett's knee sprain was really a turning point because, as we're getting ready to in the third quarter, Ohio State's offense just started completely coming to a halt after pretty much humming at times in the first half. It was pretty much a stalemate for the majority of the third quarter until the Buckeyes were able to, they got the ball with about 9.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, where they were able to drive all the way to the Penn State 23, and they were able to get a 41-yard field goal attempt, but it was missed. Those 3 points maybe have been the difference to go to overtime. Your thoughts on that pivotal moment of the game?
On Nuremberger missing the field goal?
Yes.
Well, it was. Let's just call it what it was. I mean, this was Ohio State's first true road test. I don't want to. I mean this with no disrespect to, because I know that Ohio State, and here on the podcast, we've been fortunate to have, individuals come on, from when Ohio State played Navy and when Ohio State, went to Maryland. And that's not to say that Ohio State didn't necessarily travel, but neither of those venues were nearly as hostile as what Ohio State experienced at Penn State on Saturday night. And Sean Nuremberger, if anything, he missing that field goal. I mean, it's going to have to be some, I don't want to say a cause for alarm, but it's definitely going to be a cause for concern, probably at least in the eyes of the fans. I'm presuming, obviously, that's an area that the coaching staff is working on, because guess what? In 2 weeks or less than 2 weeks, they travel to East Lansing. It won't be as large of a venue, but it will be certainly as hostile, and the same thing when they go to Minneapolis. So I completely agree that Sean Nuremberger missing the field goal, JT Barrett not only, and I'll go into greater detail about that, and I appreciate Shannon referencing my previous comments about JT Barrett on the previous podcast, but I think JT Barrett not only with the sprained MCL injury that he sustained during the Penn State game, I think it's more than coincidental that after Ohio State, after JT Barrett was intercepted by Penn State, that Coach Herman, the clamps kind of basically came on off the offensive game plan, and as you said, Josh, everything kind of came to a grinding halt during the second half.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. When the basis of playing in front of that crowd, not used to that crowd noise and everything, and then all of a sudden Penn State showed something different that Brax or JT wasn't used to. When the defense, both defensive tackles dropped back, and he threw that interception. That changed a lot of the things, and I think, like you said, Herman just put the clamps on and was like, we're not going to throw it to cause another interception so they can try to run it back and change more momentum of the game.
Well, as I said on Twitter during the game, it was a return to trestle ball. That's pretty much exactly what it was, to a very conservative, very play it safe type of football, which I didn't miss that type of football because it just makes you want to rip your hair out.
But right.
It worked for 10 years for trestle, but you'll lose a few years off your life in the process.
Right, and the same thing happened, if you remember, against Wisconsin last year, if I'm not mistaken. We were up big against Wisconsin, and all of a sudden they went conservative against them, and then Wisconsin started making a comeback. So, I mean, it's proven that, especially against this team, that you can't go conservative with, the youth, and I don't know if it's the conditioning or what, but you've seen in the fourth quarter that defense was tired with the three and outs of that offense.
Well, this is just, again, so a couple things about, and Shannon, you're right, Ohio State did all of a sudden become very conservative, not only against Penn State, you're right, not only last season against Wisconsin, but also the previous, in 2012, the same thing. Ohio State had, they were on the road at Wisconsin, had a 14-0 lead, and all of a sudden went very, very conservative. And, in terms of, what Coach Herman and I have in common as it relates to Mensa is, Coach Herman is a member of Mensa, and I've heard of Mensa, and that's pretty much the extent as to what we have in common. But I will say this much. I think it is very telling that somebody can become very predictable and very conservative in big games. I think even Coach Meyer alluded to it possibly yesterday in his press conference, that is something that is, I'll say it, is a cause of concern for the fans, because in a couple weeks, less than a couple weeks, when Ohio State goes on the road up to East Lansing, and I don't want to go away from, you know, overlooking Illinois, because that's how I think, you know, sometimes, you know, when, you know, like the idea of like trap games and upsets, that's an easy way to happen. But, you know, some of the play calls, and I'm not sure, you know, Josh, if you were going to allude to this one, but the most conservative play call that I remember, and I can't remember precisely which quarter it was, I know it was in the second half, was Ohio State had a 3rd and 6, and they decided to run the Wildcat formation with Dontre Wilson. And to just kind of expand upon that, I have nothing against using Dontre Wilson, you know, in creative ways, but when you're with Ohio State, every snap that they seem to take, they always have a shotgun snap. So number one, it's not just a 3rd and 6. Now you're actually 5 yards further back. So it's almost like Dontre Wilson had to go 11 yards on a 3rd and 6. Because instead of lining up the quarterback under center, you're basically adding more of a challenge for the offense. But, you know, I have no problem with being conservative, but sometimes I think Ohio State tries to not only get they become overly conservative way too soon, but I think they try to become, I don't want to sound, you know, like I'm bitter about the whole Mensa thing, but a little too smart for their own good. And what I mean by that is, on numerous occasions, Ohio State struggled on short yardage plays, on 3rd and 1. And again, I think back to, why not line up the quarterback under center? And, I mean, that Cardell Jones play where they brought him in and he didn't get the first down. Well, yeah, because that shotgun snap, you're pushing him back 5 yards further than he needs to be. Line up under center. You've got, not necessarily, he's not as big as Carlos Hyde, but Ezekiel Elliott's a very physical back. You're going to tell me that on 3rd and 1 that Cardale Jones couldn't have just plowed ahead, or Ezekiel Elliott couldn't have gone off tackle and got a simple yard? I just think sometimes the coaching staff not only gets a little too creative, but as we've been discussing, far more conservative than it needs to, far, far too early in the game.
They outthink themselves.
Absolutely.
No, I mean, you're exactly right on that. I mean, Cardell Jones is tall enough that on that, you know, that particular play to where, you know, line up underneath center, all he's got to do is lean forward and get that yard.
I mean, that guy is not only tall, but he's just a physically massive individual. I mean, he's a legit 6'6", 250, 260. I mean,
right.
It's going to take more than, all right, by and large, I think he's, and I didn't mean to take us off topic here, but you guys have heard me, and the podcast listeners have heard me talk about this, is for the longest time, I've been advocating giving Cardale Jones more playing time in the event of an injury. And now that JT Barrett has sustained a sprained MCL, because the only way that's going to get better is rest. So I'm looking back on it with regret, thinking, you know, a lot of those blowout wins, and we're talking about Kent State near the end of the second half when Ohio State was pulling away from Cincinnati, with Maryland, with Rutgers, probably the coaching staff probably should have been playing Cardale Jones a heck of a lot more. And I realize I'm going to kind of, you know, steal some of Shannon's, you know, I know Shannon prefers to be the controversial one. I'm going to suggest, if it's possible, if this weekend against Illinois, if Ohio State gets a big lead, to not only play Cardale Jones a lot, but depending on what kind of lead, I think possibly burning that red shirt of Stephen Collier, because you never know what kind of, how bad this injury could possibly be for JT Barrett, because the next thing you know is Stephen Collier would have no playing experience possibly as you head into the teeth of the Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, and that was some I definitely want to hit on more when we talk about the upcoming Illinois game, because I know you have brought that up a lot in the show. Me and Shane were actually talking about it before the podcast began about it too, and it's an excellent point, because there were clear blowouts in that game, and you wonder why Barrett was left in as long as he did, but it's ifs, ands, and buts now. You can't change that. Hopefully against Illinois this week he gets some playing time, but we'll discuss that later in the show. Moving on, fast-forwarding through this game, after the missed field goal from Nuremberger, it didn't come back to haunt Ohio State immediately. Penn State actually threw an interception on the very next drive to Tyvis Powell. Buckeyes, they weren't able to do anything like that. So heading into the fourth quarter, it was 17-7 Ohio State. Still relatively comfortable lead. Penn State, of course, started off the fourth quarter there. They punted the ball back away. The very first play of the next drive, Barrett threw an interception right to the linebacker, Mike Hole, who returned it 12 yards. Setting up pretty good field position at 45, Penn State is able to actually put up together a pretty good drive. They went right down the field, capped off with a Hackenberg touchdown pass to Saeed Blacknell for 24 yards, and the extra point made it 17-14. So at this point, the Buckeyes are pretty much sweating. They got the ball back the very next drive. Once again, conservative play calling, not 100% Barrett led to a pretty stalled out drive right around midfield. Penn State was able to get the ball back. Once again, another punt. Ohio State punted it back to Penn State. And the very next drive, though, with about 3 minutes ago, Penn State was able to get all the way down to the Ohio State 14, where they made the 31-yard field goal to tie it up 17-all. Heading into overtime, I know you guys, I can't remember exactly all of the controversial calls, so I'll let you guys talk about it there in the fourth quarter, but what controversial calls against Ohio State stood out in your mind?
Shannon, do you want, because I there's two that come to mind. One of which was shown on television. The other one was not, to the best of my knowledge. The first was Joey Bosa was called for a roughing the passer call, and on the replay you saw that he was rolled into Christian Hackenberg, and they called it, it was one of these things where, okay, after he was rolled into him, they called it roughing the passer, and then, okay, so that's 15 yards and an automatic first down, and then the one that was on, Josh, you just referred to the drive that allowed Penn State to go down the field and kick a field goal to tie it up and send it into overtime. Well, Curtis Grant was flagged for the same thing, for a roughing the passer, automatic, first down. That kept a drive alive, and the controversy was, I never saw, and again, I don't want to sound as though I'm speaking for the entire Ohio State fan base, but I never saw what he did. And so
I want to cut in. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead. No.
I want to cut in real quick to paint the picture of that scenario there. It was a minute 10 to go, first and 10. Hackenberg was sacked for a 7-yard loss by Boza, who played out of his mind. We'll talk about him. So it's 52 seconds to go, second and 17, right at the 50. When Hackenberg completed the pass to Deshaun Hamilton for 7 yards, when that play happened, that Grant was flagged for roughing the passer, which was huge because in the very next play they got the ball to 28-yard line. If that the roughing the passer isn't called, who knows? And that we might not even got overtime.
That's what I'm saying. And again, I think at this point the officiating crew, I'm not saying that they were trying to even it out. I'm not suggesting that. I am going to say that I think the officiating crew was just. They were just bad, for lack of a better phrase. I mean, I just think that the officiating crew. This kind of goes back to where we were starting with. Is I just think that this officiating crew had so many egregious errors that hurt both sides. I think that they should be suspended for a game. And I know Shannon referred to the Big Ten Network. I know that I heard that on one of the Big Ten. Football shows, I can't recall which one, last evening, I heard the exact same statement, so I completely agree with that.
Now, my thing I was going to say about the fourth quarter wasn't so much about the officiating, but Ohio State could have put that game away because Eli Apple had an interception that he dropped.
Yes.
Powell had an interception that he dropped. So, I mean, yeah, the officiating changed some of the game, but Ohio State themselves also literally let it slip right through their hands.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, too. It wasn't just the officiating cost Ohio State. It was two very big plays they could have made that could have sealed the game up right there. Of course, they didn't make the plays. So we're off to double overtime. The game ends up going. The first overtime, Penn State gets the ball first. They're able to pretty much walk to the end zone on their first drive. So they score. Pressure's on Ohio State. All of a sudden, the Ohio State offense is woken right back up as Elliott rushes for 3 yards on the first play. Barrett then makes it a rush for 17 yards, and then he makes another rush for 5 yards for the touchdown to tie the game right back up. So Ohio State, they get the ball back again. In the second overtime, they're able to go right down the field once again. After a big penalty, I have to mention that. I almost forgot to mention that. It was the big penalty on the extra point, I believe, was it?
Yeah, that was actually a good call.
That was a good call.
Yeah, that was a good call because they showed the replay, and you know that
Mike Hall.
Yeah, that you know that you can't do that. That they stopped that what 3 or 4 years ago or something like that.
Oh, more like 20, 30 years ago.
Has it been that long?
I can't. Oh yeah, remember. Yeah. That actually, I mean, I remember. Not watching the game, but I've seen the highlights of it. Actually happened during a Notre Dame Michigan game years ago, and the player jumped on somebody's back, and that was when they enacted that rule, which is a good rule.
Yeah, no, without a doubt.
Yeah, that was a game-changing play right there. Is the penalty many thought we put on Penn State, but actually it was tacked on very next overtime, start off the double overtime. As Ohio State started off at 12-yard line, so it was pretty much a foregone conclusion they were going to score there. They scored the touchdown to take the lead 31-24. Penn State got the ball back, and the defense came through big here. They didn't let him do anything here. Boza, of course, made the final play, sacking Hackenberg to end the ball game and give Ohio State the big victory in Happy Valley. So Barrett and Boza were obviously the MVPs of this game, right, guys?
Oh, easily. Yeah. Easily.
And the way Boza sacked Hackenberg, I mean, first of all, as far as what I read, that the running back was supposed to do an out. He wasn't even supposed to stay in there. And he seen Boza come in there, so he tried to, you know, he was like, uh-oh, and just got thrown back into Hackenberg, and Hackenberg just crumbled. That was beast mode, pure beast mode.
And to compliment JT Barrett, you know, he, you know, again, with that sprained MCL and scoring those touchdowns in the overtime periods, I mean, especially the one that won the game was just pure heart and grit of JT Barrett. As Coach Meyer said in his press conference yesterday about, you know, he was, I think, around like the 3-yard line, and he just kept pushing and pushing and pushing until he crossed the goal line.
Yeah, that was that performance by Barrett in overtime was very, very admirable, and it showed the kind of leadership ability he has on this team. To lead that team like that, just pretty much put the offense on his back, not at 100%, and carry them to victory in that game. And it was a great learning moment, a great learning game for Ohio State to go on the road like that and pick up a really close victory. I think Urban realized that afterwards, even though everyone was on eggshells there at the end of that game. I know I was, but it was a crazy game. It was ugly. I said I need therapy after that game, and it was a crazy game. It reminded me a lot of the Trestle era, but a win's a win. A win's a win, as they say in college football. So we'll move on now to Big Ten. Go ahead.
Can I before we get into the Big Ten, I mean, because you're absolutely right, a win's a win. And I think that's something that Ohio State fans need to remember, and that is that nobody should ever take winning for granted, because if you think of it this way, you know, I know we're about ready to talk about the results of the Big Ten, but, like, do you think the Big Ten fans of Maryland, Minnesota, Rutgers, Michigan wouldn't want to trade places with Ohio State right now after their team's lost? You know, because, yeah, Ohio State's win was ugly, and, you know, Ohio State, you know, we've been talking about, you know, some of the, you know, the controversial officiating and how the game was closer, you know, than the fans like us and the coaches and the players wanted, or, you know, and I'll throw myself on this one, like, than I predicted. And there's obviously areas to be concerned about and improve them up, but you have to look at the big picture. Ohio State's still in the thick Big Ten East division race. They, for all we know, they possibly still could be in the college playoff if they keep winning out. So be happy with the win, because it's so easy to take winning for granted. And I know we're about ready to start talking about Big Ten football. You know, I want to give credit to Penn State, you know, for their fans, for their coaches, for their players, for the tough game. But I think you got to give credit to Ohio State's players and coaches for all their heart and winning in a loud, grueling environment.
I agree with Chip. And if you remember the 2001-2002 season, how many close games did they escape with? And they, you know, end up winning a national championship that year. So, I mean, you know, like you said, a win's a win. I mean, there's some games that they shouldn't have won. Purdue, they barely beat, you know, in that year and everything, but they won it all that year. So a win's a win.
Well, as they say, the best teams win the close games, and Ohio State won a close one against Penn State. So looking at the Big Ten slate now, there were some interesting results. Of course, we'll get some of the more boring ones out of the way first. Wisconsin crushed Maryland 52-7. Wisconsin's now awakened, so that's one thing to watch out for. The sleeping giant has been awoken in Madison.
Well, they needed that bye week in order to fix their problems.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nebraska beat Rutgers 42-24 is a really easy win for them. Illinois upset Minnesota 28-24. This was a pretty shocking result. And, of course, Michigan State, the big brother now, beat the little brother Michigan 35-11 in a pretty fun rivalry game to watch. I could say a lot on that, but I'll let you guys your comments on this slate of Big Ten results.
Well, Sparty definitely put a stake in Hoke and Dave Brandon's career because, I mean, they're done for. You could just say they're done for. I mean, I've already read somewhere where the president of University of Michigan has already asked for Brandon's resignation, and he said no, and you got to fire me for just cause. And I think they might have just found a just cause by some kind of email or something like that. But yeah, Hoke's done at the end of the season. The Illinois game, that was kind of a shocker. But Holy Abdullah. Jeez, what do you have, 346 all-purpose yards or something like that all by himself?
Yes.
That just, I mean, oh, man. And talking about, you know, we've been sitting here talking about, you know, JT Barrett, you know, being in the Heisman picture, which now obviously he's out of the Heisman picture. Abdullah has put himself into the Heisman picture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Chip, your thoughts on the Big Ten slate?
Well, it was disappointing that Minnesota lost because a few weeks ago we've been talking about Ohio State with their schedule. They need Minnesota to be, you know, that I had hoped that Minnesota would only have the one loss when Ohio State goes up to Minneapolis, but, and I realize we're going to talk in greater detail about Illinois later on, but give credit to Illinois for, you know, they came out, got the win over a team that I think by and large we all thought was superior with Minnesota. I realize, you know, Shannon was just raving about Amir Abdullah, but he's absolutely correct in his praise and admiration because you talk about a lot of the great players in the history of Nebraska football that have either won the Heisman Trophy or been up for consideration. I think Amir Abdullah is certainly going to earn an invitation to New York City for the Heisman Trophy. And the Michigan State-Michigan game, well, before I get into Michigan State-Michigan, you're absolutely right. I've been referring to Wisconsin as the sleeping giant has awakened. I think they figured out no matter who they put behind center, just hand the ball to Melvin Gordon. And that, you know, maybe that'll be the team that if Ohio State wins out, maybe Ohio State will get to play a familiar nemesis in Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship. But getting back to Michigan State and Michigan, you know, we already, you know, Shannon already referred to the steak episode, and I mentioned this on the podcast briefly last week, but Michigan fans, they can thank former Wolverines running back Mike Hart for as long as Mark D'Antonio is there for that whole like little brother comment, because that's all Mark D'Antonio needs to play in the locker room for Michigan State. Now the Wolverines, for whatever reason, they decided to do that, bring out that stake, which blew up in their faces, and again, you know, we've gone so in depth about the problems that are up in Ann Arbor. The Shannon just referred to the emails that Dave Brandon has been replying back to the fans up there, basically saying like you can get another team, you know, like we'll sell your tickets, all these things that are just starting to kind of percolate to the surface. So it's a huge mess up there. I can't even begin, you know, to describe, you know, all the different changes that need to take place up in Ann Arbor. But the Big Ten is definitely shaping up to be, you know, we're going to see a highly competitive race, I think, all the way through the month of November.
Yeah, that's a mess in Ann Arbor. I mean, and on top of that, their fans are whining after the game about that late touchdown. Well, your players shouldn't have stuck a stake in the opponent's field. So you pretty much get what you deserve. I don't blame D'Antonio for being pretty angry in that press conference. He made a statement with that last touchdown, and I would have did the exact same thing he did in that situation. But the good news is for Michigan fans, Dr. Josh is going to help your team quite soon. He's got the exact remedy to help your situation. So stay tuned for that on the site. I wanted to plug that a little bit.
Okay.
Does Dr. Josh have anything to do with their playing watch?
Playing watch?
Did you guys see how Michigan was on plane watch yesterday, where the Michigan private plane was going to California and Louisiana and stuff?
Right, yeah. He's talking about
flight
the
tracker and all that.
Yeah, flight tracker, and it has a Michigan, I don't want to say, is it a helmet or a Block M?
It's a Block M.
Okay.
I believe it's a Block M. It had the, I forget, it had the numbers on the wing and everything like that. They had a picture of it in Louisiana airport.
It sounds more exciting to watch than a Michigan football game, I know that.
I realize we're gonna talk about the upcoming games, but it goes back to what you guys have heard me say this ad nauseum. I don't know any coach that would want to go there as long as Dave Brandon is there. So
he's not going
to
be there.
Right. I think the axe has to be swift and severe to try and salvage any kind of recruiting class, because they're losing their recruits. The local newspapers have completely turned against the athletic department. I mean, it's a dumpster fire, I think, is being charitable and insulting to dumpster fires. So
from what I'm understanding is that, and don't quote me 100% on this, but this is coming from Greg Henson, which I sent you the link at one time. He was saying basically that this pretty much the termination of David Brandon has to happen before the election time, because
right.
the regents get voted in, and on November 4th, if they get more Republican regents in, then there's going to be more pushback, and, you know, from the regents of wanting to keep Brandon, even though Brandon just lost his key supporter in Stephen Ross, that he gave the green light to go ahead and get rid of him. And I think you put out I think it was on your Facebook, or you might have tweeted it out, a story from John U. Bacon, where that Michigan is actually getting ready to basically go broke.
Right.
And, I mean, all this, I mean, yeah, he's did great, and, you know, he's putting money into the lacrosse stadium and swimming, you know, facilities and all of the other athletics, but he spent so much money that Michigan is literally on the verge of going broke. It's a really bad situation, mm-hmm. And if you're going to see him get fired here, I pretty much, if he doesn't get fired before the election, then there's probably going to be a problem if, like they said, if there's going to be more Republican regents. So it's going to be interesting this next week.
His goose is cooked.
Yes.
His goose is cooked. He's done. Hoke is done. They're going to have to start completely over, and it's going to take them a few years at least probably to get back to what they want to. So we can talk about that dumpster fire all day up there in Michigan, but we're going to move on now to our weekly pick-ems. Of course, we'll rapidly go through picking some of the top games this week, as well as the Big Ten games. So we'll start with the national games. A Thursday night thriller, Florida State, who many anticipate being the top four of the first college football playoff poll tonight, are going on the road at Louisville, who could possibly be ranked. Who do you guys like in this one, the Cardinals or the Seminoles?
At what point in time do these distractions finally catch up with this team? And it's not even just Winston anymore.
Yeah, it's Carlos Williams, the running back now, being investigated for domestic abuse. So the controversy continues to surround him.
Well, not even just that. There's some other story of, I forget, I don't know fully, so I'm not going to go there with that. I just know that his girlfriend or whatever is asking for them to step out and not investigate anything. But there's some other, he's involved with something else also.
Well, yeah, that's the Carlos Williams story.
There's two prongs to the Carlos thing. That, you know, the battery, and there's something else. I don't remember what the other part is.
I thought it was theft.
Yes, there's something involved with theft, but I'm not 100% sure, so I don't want to put the wrong information out there.
So I guess, Josh, you asked. I'm going to tell you right now, as an Ohio State fan, obviously I would prefer to see Louisville win this game. The reason I'm kind of stammering and hedging is it would not be the most shocking thing in the world to me if Louisville were to pull off the upset, as Shannon just alluded to. It's just constant soap opera in terms of, I mean, you have Jimbo Fisher blaming ESPN and the SEC for all of Florida State's trouble. I mean, like, just these just random, like, just bizarro conspiracy thoughts that are just emanating from there. I'm not sure if you guys saw that, but I'm gonna go with Florida State, but again, on a confidence level, it's not very high. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I agree with Chip.
I'm going to go on the edge here. I'm going to take Louisville. I think this is the perfect time for an upset for the Cardinals. The game's at home. It's going to be on ESPN. They're going to pack it full there at Papa John's Stadium. And I think they pull off the upset. I really think they do. You guys brought – I forget who brought it up earlier in the show, but I think karma is going to come back and get Florida State in this game. They're going to – finally lose a game, and I think they'll pull off the upset. But moving on, a very exciting matchup I'm looking forward to is TCU at West Virginia. This one should be a barn burner, as they would say in Morgantown, a couch burner. I knew you guys would like that one. You guys like the Horned Frogs or the Mountaineers in this one?
I apologize to our listening audience and to you guys if it sounds I did not take a wishy-washy pill before the podcast. I really don't know, because I think both this should be a great game. I'm going to go with TCU simply based on the fact that I think Texas Christian traditionally defensively, I know they haven't really been that great, you know, maybe like when they played Baylor, they had that collapse. I'm going to go with TCU, but again, it won't surprise me if West Virginia wins this one.
I agree. This is going to be a good game, and I'm actually going to go with the Mountaineers, because I think TCU, just like they ran out of fireworks, they're going to run out of scoring at the end of the game, and Mountaineers are going to pull this one off.
This is a toss-up, like you guys said. I hope Gus Johnson calls this game, because that would be perfect.
Oh, jeez, that would be.
See, both teams hang like 70 on the board, go to overtime, get Johnson in there calling it. But I'm going to go TCU. I'm really impressed with their season so far. I picked West Virginia, of course, earlier this year to upset Baylor in Morgantown. I just don't know if they have the magic to pull it off again. But I'll go TCU, like Chip said. Wouldn't surprise me in the bit if West Virginia won this game, and Shannon's right. But another top matchup, Auburn at Ole Miss. Auburn's only got the one loss, of course, to Mississippi State. Ole Miss is coming off the getting upset last week. Who do you guys like in this one, the Tigers or the Rebels?
All right. I'm laughing because, again, you could flip a coin and make arguments for both. That Auburn rushing game versus Ole Miss's defense is going to be something to hold. I'm just going to go with Ole Miss just because of, I think, the defense. But this one, I could easily see Auburn winning this one too.
Yeah, I'm going with Auburn because I think Ole Miss has been exposed.
I got a stat that's going to back up my pick of Ole Miss here, and it might sway you guys even. In the last 7 years in this matchup, they faced each other the last 7 years straight. The home team is 6-1 in those seven games. So I'm going to take Ole Miss here since they're at home.
Okay.
To pull off the upset and to create even more chaos in the SEC. So one more national matchup now. Stanford at Oregon. This one's always pretty exciting, this little rivalry game between the Cards and the Ducks. Oregon, of course, is in a prime position for one of those top four playoff spots. Stanford's really out of it, so now they're just playing for a Pac-12 championship at this point. Who do you guys like in this one, the Nerds or the Flying Ducks?
Go ahead, Shannon.
See,
it's not that easy, is it?
No, it's not. And, I mean, I don't see Stanford stopping Oregon. I really don't. Stanford has a chance, but I just – every time I pick Stanford, they let me down. So I just – yeah, I'm going with Oregon. Plus, now it's coming to the point where we need Oregon to win because, you know, everybody's bashing Ohio State for that double overtime win. So if Ohio State somehow beats Michigan State, it's going to look good.
I agree that Ohio State fans need to pull for Oregon in this one. The problem that I'm having is right when you think that Stanford, because they've all season long have been woeful offensively, last week it seems like they kind of figured it out and got back to playing Stanford football, you know, meaning like kind of more like smash mouth, you know, running the ball. You know, Ty Montgomery's a really good receiver and kick returner, and their defense has been solid all year, and Oregon's offensive line and defense hasn't really been anything to write home about. So I'm going to, just because Ohio State fans need Oregon to win, you know, that's, like I said, it's such a flimsy reason to pick Oregon here.
I'm going out on a limb again, and I'm picking Stanford. And I got another stat to back up my pick. David Shaw's 14-4 against ranked opponents in his career. And he always gets up for the Oregon game. They've won the last two games here, including 2 years ago at Oregon. So I think Stanford's defense really exposed the Oregon offensive line, which has been the real weak point of the Ducks this season. I think they really disrupt the Oregon offense. I think Stanford's offense, they get up for this game, and they scored just enough points to pull this one out. This one could come down right to the wire. Wouldn't surprise me if it went to overtime, as these games between these two teams always do. I'll go with the Cardinals here. I'm going to see what happens. It should be close for the at the very least, if I'm wrong. So moving on to the Big Ten games now. Wisconsin at Rutgers. Wisconsin's a 7.5-point favorite here on the road. The Badgers roll in this one, guys?
Yeah. I think Wisconsin, they figured it out. Just run the ball, pound people into submission. I think they're going to take it to Rutgers.
Yeah, and Rutgers is 11th in the league in rushing defense. So, I mean, they can't stop the run, so definitely going with Wisconsin.
Yeah, I like the Badgers here too. They finally figured it out on offense. So and they got Stave in there, who I said should have been starting from the beginning. So I think the Badgers win this one pretty easily, and they're reasserting themselves as a threat in the Big Ten West. So moving on, Maryland at Penn State. Penn State's a 3.5-point favorite here, the game being in Happy Valley. This should turn out to be a nice rivalry game, I think, in the coming years. Who do you guys like in this one? This is a toss-up to me. Terps or Nittany Lions?
I'm going Terps on this one because Penn State lost their linebacker, Zwick. Zwinek.
He was a fullback.
The fullback, and well, they lost a safety too, didn't they? So they lost two key players. So I'm going Maryland on this one because, you know, their depth issues, it's going to start, you know, hurting them now.
I'll go... I'm going to go Penn State in a close one. That 3.5 points, I think that Josh alluded to. I think even though it was a heartbreaking loss to Ohio State, I think the home, even though they won't be as up for Maryland as they were for Ohio State, I think that'll be enough in a really close one for Penn State.
I think even though they lost, I think that was a real confidence booster for Penn State playing so well against Ohio State. I really think they're going to play with a renewed sense of vigor. And I'll take the Nittany Lions in this one. Their defense proved me wrong with how good they are. They proved they're the real deal. Hopefully their offense scores enough for them to win the game, but I'm picking Penn State in this one as well. So Northwestern at Iowa, again, another toss-up. Iowa's the 4-point favorite here at home. Who do you guys like, Wildcats or Hawkeyes?
You go ahead.
Chip. Okay. Well, Shannon, you'll be happy to know both Northwestern and Iowa had bye weeks last weekend, so they should both be well rested. I think both teams seem pretty evenly matched. I'm just going to go with Iowa being the home team that in a close one.
This is like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with kind of both teams. I mean, you know, Iowa, you don't know who's going to show up. Penn or Northwestern starts off the Big Ten slate 2-0, and then they lose their last two. But seeing how Iowa's got the number one pass defense and number one pass offense in the Big Ten, I'm going to give Iowa the edge.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Iowa here, too, just because it's at home. That's the only reason. I think this game is another one that's a complete toss-up. Northwestern wins, I wouldn't be surprised, but I'll take Iowa here too. So moving on, Purdue at Nebraska. Nebraska's the big favorite here, 23.5-point favorite to be exact. Huskers roll on this one, guys?
Yeah, I mean, everyone who listens to this podcast, and you guys know how much respect I have for Daryl Hazel and what he's building there, but I think Nebraska, I think they're on a roll.
Yeah, having a 12th, you know, ranked defense in a Big Ten isn't going to help them going against Holy Abdullah. So, I mean, coming off of that, you know, impressive performance last week, I expect him to put up another big performance again this week. So, I'm going with the Cornhuskers.
Yeah, all they got to do is hand it to Abdullah. He'll get 200 yards, and they'll pretty much walk with this victory, I think, here. Even though Purdue's an improved team, and they could give him some fight, I got to go with Nebraska here, too. So, one more Big Ten matchup before we get to our preview for Ohio State, Illinois, Indiana at Michigan. I don't know what to say about this game other than the winner still has a pretty good shot at bowl eligibility. The loser isn't looking good for him. Indiana's pretty much, they're down to their third string quarterback, I believe, now, and they're pretty much their fans or their backup. I don't know what to say about this one. This is a weird matchup. Hoosiers or Wolverines in this one?
You know what's really sad about this? Because I've been looking at, you know, the Big Ten stats this week. These are the two most identical teams stat-wise. It's not even funny. It's a toss-up. It really is. Go ahead. I'll let you pick, Chip, on this one.
Well, it's unfortunate Indiana lost, you know, their quarterback to injury, because I think they were looking like a bowl team. I mean, it seems like ancient history, but Indiana, when they beat Missouri, that was, you know, such a highlight for not only Indiana but the Big Ten in general. And I think they're just limping into the end of the season. You know, Michigan's problems, we've been talking about those probably far more than an Ohio State oriented podcast should, but I think the fact that it's going to be in Ann Arbor, even with the students wearing hashtag Fire Dave Brandon t-shirts in attendance for the television audience, I think this is the final victory for the Michigan Wolverines for the 2014 season.
Shannon, do you have a pick?
Yeah, I don't know. I just...
Maybe a tie?
It might be, because, I mean, as much as Michigan might, you know, they might be able to move the ball, they lead the league in penalties, so they shoot themselves in the foot more than they help themselves.
Don't forget Pastry Chef.
Oh, God. And for those that are new to the podcast and don't know who the Pastry Chef is, would you like to inform them?
Devin Gardner, 098.
Yes. Just out of love for my best friend, I'm going to go with Michigan on this one.
Yeah, I'm the same way with you guys. I don't know what to feel about this matchup. Hopefully we just get a few laughs out of it. I'll make it three in a row. I'm going with Michigan, and I don't feel confident about it. But, hey, at least it'll give hope for Brady Hoke State in Ann Arbor. So, hopefully that win renews their confidence in him. So, moving on, final part of the show, Ohio State match up with Illinois this weekend. Of course, Illinois coming off the upset over Minnesota, which was surprised pretty much everybody. What's the keys to the game here for Illinois, you guys think, to pull off the upset?
Well, Riley O'Toole played extremely well against Minnesota last week, and you know, for those fans of the podcast who may not have seen a lot of Illinois, you know, before they come into town, and Riley O'Toole is a much more mobile, spread option type quarterback, unlike Wes Lunt, who was the starting quarterback. If he's allowed to, you know, do a lot more, you know, running of the ball and, you know, play action type things, that I think is going to be the most important thing for Ohio State's defense, is to be able to shut down Riley O'Toole from making plays with his legs. You know, Josh Ferguson is a very good running back for Illinois. I just think it's going to come down to Ohio State being able to shut down both Ferguson and O'Toole.
Shannon, what do you think is a key for Illinois?
I'm sorry, I'm just stunned by a stat I just saw here. Devin Gardner's only thrown for one touchdown this whole season. That's mind-boggling.
We can talk about Michigan misery later.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. I'm just, you know, looking at some stats, and I was floored by that. I dumbfounded. Sorry. Containing O'Toole, like Chip said, is definitely key. Ohio State, you know, their rushing is, keying on the rush is improved. The key for Ohio State, I think, is going to be, you know, another start fast, start strong, and get Barrett out of the game.
Yes. I agree with that, and that is pretty shocking about Gardner, by the way. But I have to ask you guys another aspect of this game, and I know it's ridiculous asking. Does anybody care about this game being played for the Illinois Buck? I just never understood why this game was a trophy game, because I've never seen Illinois as a rival. I don't know if they see us as a rival. They just probably hate us. But
well, again, I'm showing my age here, and I remember very distinctly in the latter 1980s, in the 1990s, Illinois really being a thorn in the side of John Cooper. Like the Eddie George when he was a freshman, like that fumble game for Eddie George when he was a freshman, like I can still vividly recall it. It wasn't until, now granted it was about 20 years ago, that, you know, Ohio State finally seemed to kind of figure out like how to how to beat Illinois on a consistent basis. So that's why when Ohio State fans, like most people, kind of just remember, oh, you know, like they came into Ohio State, Ohio Stadium in 2007, and they upset the Buckeyes, and they think of that as like the only time Illinois has ever been successful against Ohio State. I can vividly recall Illinois really being a pain in the rump of Ohio State and John Cooper when I was going to college and watching Ohio State games. I remember it vividly. Now, getting to your point, I don't recall anyone during those times growing up or all the way up, you know, some of the games I was referencing. I don't ever remember the Illibuck being a hotly contested item. But maybe I was, you know, just more focused upon the game during those times.
My only question is, and I know you said it shows your age, and I'm not going to go and say, you know, we're about the same age or anything like that, but who wasn't a pain in Cooper's butt?
Well,
you know, and I mean, he had some of the greatest teams that, you know, you could assemble, and oh my God, we should have had so many national championships in the 80s, or, you know, in the 90s.
Oh yeah, but my point being is, early in his tenure, even before Ohio State was a national title contender, I mean, like everyone remembers the losses to Michigan, and rightly so. I distinctly recall Ohio State. I mean, like they could not beat Illinois. For whatever reason, didn't matter. The game was there. Game was in Ohio State. It didn't matter. It was some kind of a mind block. And then all of a sudden, the game that really seemed to kind of turn the tide and Ohio State seemed to have their number like all the way throughout was almost 20 years ago when Eddie George ran for, you know, 314 yards, you know, and that's what clinched the Heisman Trophy in 1995.
No, you're absolutely right.
You know, like that was like all of a sudden, like they took Illinois behind the woodshed and took it to them good.
Yeah.
Not just Eddie George, you know, running all over them. I mean, it was, and speaking of Eddie George and Illinois, I'm not sure if either of you gentlemen have seen the weather forecast for Saturday in Ohio Stadium.
Snow.
But for any of our podcast listeners who may be thinking of going or are going, bundle up because an 8 o'clock kickoff. You know, Shannon just said it. Snow is in the forecast. I'm not saying it's going to be like a blizzard or anything, but you know, like I think like the high during the day is only going to be in the mid 40s, and by you know the time that game is done, it's going to be in the 20s. So bundle up for that one. You might get some snow on Saturday night.
Ohio winter has arrived.
Don't say that.
And will last until April.
And the nice thing about the playing in the snow is that Illinois, they're allowing like 6.8 yards per play, per play on the ground, rushing wise.
Right.
And you know, that is huge for Ohio State because they're like 6.3 themselves.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just going to be, you know, I mean, just hand the ball off.
I think we would be remiss if, I mean, we were talking about, you know, not only getting JT Barrett out of the game as quickly as possible, and earlier in the podcast, and I know Shannon just said, you know, getting JT out of the game quickly. You know, we talked about earlier about Cardale Jones playing, and I advocated possibly even Stephen Collier playing. We would be remiss if, you know, the fact that Rod Smith has been dismissed from the team. This is an opportunity now if I have no idea about the health of Bryante Dunn, but, you know, here's an opportunity for somebody to seize that number two running back spot behind Ezekiel Elliott, because I'm sure he's going to need a breather, not to take anything away from Dontre Wilson or Jalen Marshall, but now we're heading into, especially if it's going to be, you know, like a muddy, snowy, you know, evening, you need a back that can plow ahead for, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards at a pop. So that's where Bryante Dunn, Warren Ball, if ever was an opportunity for them to seize that backup running back spot, I think this game is a tremendous opportunity to do so.
Curtis Samuel.
Curtis Samuel, I think is a little smaller, but yeah, I would just maybe I'm just old school. I think you know, like when I think of the Big Ten, I'm thinking, you know, like about 220 pounds.
No, I agree, and I think Dunn needs to step up, and I think the last I heard he's going to be a game-time decision, but Dunn needs to work on holding on to the ball.
Oh, I yeah, absolutely. Same thing. Like Warren Ball, I give those guys credit, though, because earlier in the year, it wouldn't have been surprising if either or both of them said, okay, well, I'm out of here. You know,
exactly. I thought you're exactly right. Go ahead.
You know, and it's like that's, you know, you never know. And again, it's not, I don't want to speak ill of Rod Smith because, as Coach Meyer referred to it, that the way that Ohio State, I think in their statement, they said that Rod Smith is working on personal issues, and out of respect for Rod Smith and everything that he is going through and his contributions to the Ohio State football program, I think the less that is said about what those personal issues, the better for him. But getting back to the subject at hand, I think here's the time for, you're right, Brian Tadunn, you were highly touted coming out of high school. Why don't you show us what you got? Warren Ball, same thing. You know, here's an opportunity for you to be rewarded for your patience and get some valuable playing time and help seal. I think it's going to be I don't know, Josh, if you're ready for some score predictions yet, but...
Yeah, go ahead. That's what I was getting ready to go to, so you guys just go right ahead with your predictions and final score.
I think it's going to be I think Ohio State will jump out to that early lead. I'm going to say 35-17 based on the fact that they're going to try to get JT out of the game, hoping to see a lot of running the ball, hoping to see a lot of Cardale Jones. That's just my prediction. I'm going to say Ohio State 35, Illinois 17.
Man, 34-17.
It's the Price is Right here.
I guess.
Because I was actually going to go 35-17, but, you know, you got to go and steal my thunder, but that's all right.
Hey.
I'm no longer going 56-3 because I've learned my lesson.
Well, the season,
I picked a big score for Virginia Tech that blew up in my face. I picked a big score for Penn State that blew up in my face. Every time I pick a conservative score, they score 50 points plus. So from here on out, where I'm going conservative.
That sprained MCL for JT Barrett, that was the impact on my prediction. Is I just think they're going to try to get the ball out of his hands. I'm hoping that our Mensa member offensive coordinator has realized running the quarterback kind of can result in a quarterback sustaining an injury. So, well,
not just that. And if it's going to be sloppy, just don't run them. Just hand the ball off. You know, if you need to throw the ball, you know, just go ahead and throw the ball. You get up a couple of scores, yank them. If they start making a comeback, bring them back in. Or, you know, just you've got to let the kid heal. We need him as close to 100% against Michigan State.
You know, I was scared last week by making that big score prediction and then it being close. I'll go a little higher than you guys. I'll take Ohio State 45-10. And the reason I think that is because I think the defense has got a field day with Illinois. I think they'll have a big game. Boza will make his presence felt again. Hopefully we see a little more Raekwon McMillan. I want to see him more in this game too. Get involved. Get some of the younger guys and the backups more involved. Get this game out of the way early, so that way they can go in the East Lansing as healthy as possible and prepare to take on the Spartans. So we all see Ohio State win this one. It could be a trap game, but you know, you never know, but Ohio State should come out with the victory in this one. As we wrap up the show, we'll remind you to please check us out, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. I forgot to mention that at the beginning of the show, our Twitter handles, you can follow Shannon at SMSOMMERS84, Chip at Chip Minick, CHIPMINNICH, and you can follow myself at Shot Josh. Also, we have another announcement. Of course, we're not only on iTunes, you can search us for us, MOTSAG Live, and there's a link on the site for it, of course, also. But we're also now, after Shannon was been pulling my leg for a while about it, but I finally got us on there. We're now on Stitcher, and that's an app on iOS and Android, I believe.
And it's free.
It's a free app. That's the main thing, because we've been promoting Pocket Cast, and it is a paid app. And obviously, we don't want to make you guys pay money. Get a free app. So now we're on Stitcher for free. So if you're on Android or iOS and you don't want to use iTunes or you're on iOS, but if you're on Android, check out us on Stitcher. We're right on there. The episode should be on later tonight. So as we sign off here, your final thoughts, guys. They're getting ready to release the first college football playoff poll. Before they get ready to release it here, quickly, who do you think the top four teams are? No particular order.
I'm going to go, I think, Mississippi State and Florida State for sure. not that I'm going to be happy about it. It's not going to surprise me if Alabama is in there. And I think the team that is probably the most deserving to be in there, because they only lost by three, at Baylor, is Texas Christian.
I see Notre Dame in there. I see Notre Dame in there over TCU.
I think the fourth team will be Oregon. I think Oregon will be the 14. They're hanging around top 5-6. The pollsters have always loved them. They're a flashy team. I think they'll put Oregon in that fourth spot. But it'll be interesting to see as they're getting ready to release it here as we sign off the air, guys. Anything else you want to throw out before we sign off?
No. Remember, once again, it's Testicular Tuesday. Check your boys. Get it caught. Don't be embarrassed. See your doctor if you find something wrong. You could be a survivor like me.
Well, I was just going to say, happy Halloween, my fellow podcasters and the listening audience. Be safe if you're going to be out and about, not just for yourself, but for your loved ones. And make sure if you're going to be imbibing or anything, make sure to have either a designated driver or call someone, because I know this is the time of year for a lot of Halloween parties. So just be safe and smart. And for anyone going to that Ohio State game, dress warmly.
Yes, and also don't forget, if you have any questions or feedback, because we have been receiving feedback and we appreciate it, hit us up at askmotsag@gmail.com or hashtag askmotsag on Twitter. And we appreciate the feedback and we appreciate everybody listening.
Couldn't have said it better myself, guys. As always, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time Live, Minutes Garden Gray Live, for Chip, Shane, and myself, Josh Schott. Thank you for listening, folks, and go Bucks.
Go Bucks.